Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Hey, it's getting warmer out. You feeling it? Finally. Oh my goodness. Took like a long time, but spring is springing. It reminds me of something. It reminds me of all the wonderful progressions that life has. You know, little children. I remember when Dave was little, riding his toy truck up the canter's leg and down again. He gave that up long ago. I remember when Dave Nardone taught him Hebrew, the alphabet, and you know, life has a progression, and it can be a beautiful progression. And there's a progression I want to talk about with you this morning, which is not about our individual lives, but really our individual lives in the context of the flow of history. Because that's not an abstract concept or idea. History is what we're all part of. We all live and we're part of this flow. And it's a good thing to know where it's going. So that's what I want to talk about, where it's all going. And I want to start with a terrific story, a true story. And then the second part of what I want to say is how we enter into the story with respect to Passover, which each Passover takes us a little bit further in the flow of God's purposes for Israel and the world. So that's where we're going. I have a story, and then I want to help you enter the story. The story I want to tell you is a true story again, and it's about a very famous rabbi who died not long ago, and his name was Yitzhak Kuderi. And I want to tell you about Yitzhak Kuderi. He grew up in Iraq and moved to Israel long before the nation of Israel was formed, and he died at age, and we're not sure, either 104 to 106, around then, quite elderly. And he was an amazing guy. He had a photographic memory and was known for his ability to, if you loaned him a book, because he earned some of his money as a bookbinder, and he would make a deal with you. He'd say, look, I'll bind your book for free. Would you loan it to me for a while? And people would often say, sure, hold on to it. And then they'd come back a while later. He had memorized the whole thing. He could tell you every page, right? He had memorized the Torah. He had memorized the Talmud. I mean, he's an amazing guy. And he had a reputation that was, in a way, like in the Protestant world or the Christian world, would be like Billy Graham, in this sense, that among the Haredi, among the very, very Orthodox Jewish people living in Israel, and he was in Israel, as I mentioned, among them, we might think superficially that everyone is kind of has the same outlook. But actually, there are, in a sense, like denominations among the Haredi. Not strictly, but you see it when you visit the Western Wall, and you see that outfits are somewhat different. Maybe in general they're black, but then some of the young men would have high socks and others lower, and there would be different emblems of being really part of different groupings that would follow different rabbis. And there can be rather significant differences, although to the superficial onlooker it could seem like everyone is the same. But this guy, this fellow, was amazing in that he was respected and loved among all the different groups. So when we think about a Billy Graham meeting, you have Catholics, Baptists, everybody puts aside their differences and let's all be part. Well, in a sense, he was like that, an amazing, amazing person. And he taught at Nachalat Yitzchak Yeshiva, and I mentioned about the binding books. He was also loved because of the blessings he would confer on people. And he would put his hands on them and pray a blessing, and people would have children, they wanted children, or a job thing could be resolved. And he just one of those amazing, amazing people. Well, he surprised everybody in October of 2005. He surprised everybody at the Yom Kippur service where he was speaking in his congregation, and he said that the Messiah, the name of the Messiah, had been revealed to him, that he had met him in a vision, I know his name, and I will write it down in a note in my own handwriting. Well, that got quite a stir. And he went on to say, 1 year after my death, I want the note read by my colleagues. You with me so far in this story? Okay? So, here's what happens. He dies rather suddenly shortly after that, in January of 2006. He died by pneumonia, and it's a relatively way to go for quite an elderly person. He hadn't declined much. He was as sharp as a tack up to the time of his sickness, but he did die. And I want to show you how much this fellow was loved. Kadiri, at his funeral, there were 300,000 people. They shut the streets of Jerusalem for two whole days. People flew in from all over. The president of Israel spoke at his funeral. He was a profoundly respected and loved person. So, for a whole year, everyone is on Spielkes, right? Pins and needles, if you don't know Yiddish. And they're on Spielkes, wondering the name of the Messiah. Now keep in mind, in the Haredi community, as in the Messianic Jewish community, Messiah and who he is and what he's all about is very important. Not as much in the more liberal Jewish world, which has its very many positive points as well. But anyhow, 1 year later, his website posted his words. And I'll just read it to you in Hebrew, and I'll translate after that. Yorim ha'am v'yikoach she'davaro v'torato omedim. And in addition to some other commentary, the words go as this. Concerning the letter abbreviation of the Messiah's name, and here's the translation, he will lift the people and prove that his word and law are valid. That's the quote that I just read to you. This I have signed in the month of mercy, Yitzhak Kadori. Now, it was up on the website for about a month, but people were disappointed. I thought you were going to give us the name of the Messiah. Well, he did. He did as what's known as an acrostic or an acronym. An acronym. And so, after roughly a month, some of his students who he had been teaching and who knew who he believed the Messiah to be, apparently it was them who noted that if you look at the words and take each first letter, you get a name. It becomes a name. And the name, if you look at the different letters, is Yehoshua. Yehoshua. Now in Hebrew, Yehoshua is exactly the same. The vowel pointing is somewhat differently. There's a vowel letter in there and blah, blah, blah. But it's the same word as, you guessed it, Yeshua. How do you think that went over? Can you imagine? Can you imagine? I read a number of the quotes of people who said, this is impossible. Rev Yitzhak Kadori would never write such a thing. But the point is, it was up on the website. And only after the implications or the translation was what became clear was it taken down in a hurry. And the point is that according to a person who spoke directly to the people involved in this, the paper was taken to the Dead Sea, burned with sulfuric acid and put in the sea along with a Kabbalistic curse. Understand this. Put it in context, this story. Can you imagine, I'm making this analogy between Billy Graham as a love person, love trans-denominationally, right? You know, all kinds of people. Kadori also was loved that way. Can you imagine Billy Graham getting up and saying, the name of the Messiah has been revealed to me, it's Mohammed. How would that go down? Billy Graham, of blessed memory, he's not with the world anymore. But I'm saying that if you, from the perspective of, you know, traditionally oriented Jewish people, that this revered rabbi would say Yehoshua is the name of the Messiah that had been revealed to him in a vision, certainly was extremely, extremely difficult. And yet, the people who've done the research, who've talked to the people, I myself have seen some of the testimonies of his students. He had a select group of students who he was teaching this to beforehand, and I've heard some of them, online, they'd say, no, he believed Yeshua was the Messiah, and I believe it too. And one of the comments was that there are a lot of Messianic Jews in the Haredi community, but it's very difficult for them to speak or to speak out because of the kind of ostracism in such a tight-knit community. You like that story? Yeah. Isn't that a great story? Yeah, and it seems to be true. You know, in other words, the people who've done the research, obviously it's difficult, as I mentioned, for a number of people, for a lot of our people to accommodate this, because it seems like from their point of view, you know, who does Yeshua represent? You know, most of our people don't get it or see him within the flow of the history we're talking about. But we're part of that flow, and what we see is God doing some amazing things, even in the most conservative, if you will, segment of the Jewish community. Some of you know Eugene Lubman. Eugene is the spiritual leader of Beth Yeshua, which is our sister Russian-speaking congregation in Newton. And Eugene and I took a long walk a few months ago, and he said, you know, Rabbi Rich, my sense is that the great turning of our people to Mashiach is going to be among the Haredi community. And I didn't really say yes or no, because we don't have much direct contact with the Haredi community living in suburban Boston. But after learning this story and investigating the evidence for its trustworthiness and all the rest, I think Eugene may have a real point. So that is the story. Now, I'm telling you this because it's all part of a flow of history on the assumption, and I think we make the right assumption, as Rabbi Kaduri did, that Yeshua is the one. He is the one. So history is flowing and moving toward a culminating point, which won't be the end of history, but it will be history taken to its next level. We don't talk about the end of history. That would not be an accurate way to put it. But I want to tell you how you can become more part of the action of history. And not in some vague theoretical way. I want to talk very practically with you, and it has to do with Pesach, which begins Friday night. So here's the point. It's not so much in the talking and the philosophizing. It's in the doing. It's getting in the flow of the grand play that is being played out on the plane of human history, and specifically for us, Israel's history, and how that impacts the world. And so I want to suggest to you a number of things to get you ready so that you can join in concrete, specific terms, not in just in terms of broad generalities and intellectual assent to certain ideas. So here's what I want to suggest. First of all, there's a sermon which I did last year, which is on our website, and it is a summary of some of the things I'm going to say now with some additional information. I want to encourage you to listen to that sermon. It also begins with a really neat story of a different kind about Leonard Bernstein. You'll hear it, I think you'll like it, and I think you'll learn in a way that'll help you enter in, because we're talking about enter in. So check that sermon out. Next, I want to suggest that you sign up even today for the Ruach Israel Seder. We only have limited room, but it's important. It's important to come to a Seder that reflects the fullness of our commitments. I hope that you'll go to other Seders with family and whatnot. That's beautiful. Maybe they're followers of Yeshua, maybe not. But it's very important that we together reinforce with one another the great realities that we stand for. So the space is limited. Sign up for the Seder. You'll hear more about that at Oneg. Next, the Seder, the Ruach Seder, is the second night, but our custom, along with Orthodox and conservative Jews, is to celebrate two Seders, the first and second night. So the first night, the way it works, is you have people over at the house and you invite people over. Now this can seem terribly intimidating if you've never done it, but it's not that tough. And we can recommend there are siddurim that you can use that are relatively quick and that are kid-oriented, and you just follow through, and don't worry about an elaborate meal. There are certain foods that we should have and not have at Pesach, but you don't have to knock yourself out in the kitchen for 5 hours. Do something simple, because that's not the point. The point is being together and getting into the flow of history that began with that that first Seder with Moses and the children of Israel in Egypt long ago and has continued for this some 3,500 years. And so I want to encourage you, if you don't have a Seder to go to on the first night, go around afterwards and say, hey, listen, want to get together, and maybe it'll be five people or whatever. Just do it, okay? I want to encourage you along those lines. Next, I want to suggest, according to the halakha, as we practice it here, based on the determinations of the Messianic Jewish Rabbinical Council, that next Friday take off from work. It's one of those important days. It's the seventh day of Pesach. Take off, if you can, next Friday, and want to encourage you along those lines. Moving on. Now here, this begins this coming, you could begin it right away. Sue and I have begun already. You begin to get the chametz out of the house, all the leavened products, and you just collect them and you put them in a box, and then what you do is either of two things. One custom is to go to a non-Jewish neighbor and say, hey, listen, could I sell you my chametz for a week, for the time of Passover, the 8 days? And you put it in their garage or wherever they want you to put it, and they give you a dollar bill. And then you hold on to the buck until after Passover, and then you buy it back for them from the dollar, unless you got some very opportunistic neighbors who want to charge you five, but that's another story, and most of us do not have that. They'll give it back to you. You say, well, why do that? Well, you see, getting into the flow of all this involves a kind of enactment. It's allowing your heart and mind to be informed by your actions, so you're doing these things in a way that just kind of reinforces and makes you part of the people doing these kind of things. And it's not meaningless. It actually is quite meaningful, although at any given point, it may be somewhat seem unfamiliar to you. We're almost done. Next Thursday at night, particularly if you have kids, Bidikat Chometz. So what you do is you get a flashlight and a little dustpan and a feather you could use or whatever. We have a feather that's used that we haven't, well, the kids are out of the house. But nonetheless, you sprinkle around some chometz on the floor and you go hunting. This is very fun. You go hunting with the kids. Ooh, there's a piece right there. And you sweep it up. And then the next day, you just have a little fire. You just burn it on the stove. And you know, again, it's more of a symbolic gesture than anything, any big deal. But it helps us because our enactments, what we do, have a spillover effect to our moral and ethical lives. All of this, getting rid of the chametz, is a picture of purification of Israel and personally a picture of purification. So we're entering into the spirit of the holiday, and it is affecting us because of that spirit of that what I call spillover effect to our moral and ethical lives, which obviously are most important to God. Now, one other point, and that is a change, a halakhic change. In the MJRC, last year, we determined that we are going to make it permissible to have certain foods that would not traditionally have been eaten. And this is not just us. In the larger Jewish community, there's a reevaluation of the halakhic norms. It has to do with kitniot. Has to do with foods that are not leavened, but because they look like kind of like leavened stuff, or they may rise because of water content, that they had been forbidden for a long time. But what we're finding with all of the food restrictions that people have nowadays, it's difficult to do Passover Seders without. So things like sesame seeds and sunflower seeds and corn and rice, lentils, legumes, these are fair game for Pesach, and they will be at our own Seder. So just want to mention that. Now, if you have traditional sensibilities, you say, no, you know what? I've always grown up, we did not have kitniot, and we're not going to have it now at my home Seder. We say, sure. Do your thing. You don't have to do it this way. I'm just saying that there is the freedom to have kitniot. Okay, let me conclude this morning, okay? Rav Katuri's proclamation of Yeshua is a step along the way in the fulfillment of Yeshua's words. You'll recall these. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often I've wanted to gather you as a mother hen gathers her chicks, but you would not. Behold, your house is left to you desolate. What is the house? What do you think it is? The temple, right? Your house will be destroyed. It's a prediction of the destruction of the temple some 40 years later. Because you will not see me again, Yeshua says, until you, Jerusalem, say, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai. I like to think of Rabbi Kadori's revelation as a step along the way to the fulfillment of Yeshua's words. And there's another reference to Jerusalem, but this time in our Seder, at the end. How does it go? Do you remember? Yeah, how about in Hebrew, though? Lashana haba Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem. So I want to say to you, join the cast, get into the story, see you at the Seder.
Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be those. Know your name and study your Torah for Messiah.